You're listening to an FX PhD podcast from fxphd.com.
Hi, and welcome to this week's FX PhD. John Montgomery with you, joined by Mike after a brief break. How's it going, my friend?
Good. It was one of the most bizarre weeks in that we were almost in the same country for a second.
And I say break. I say break from an FX PhD standpoint, to break from a lack of work standpoint. I guess I should clarify that. Yes, sorry about not having a DOD last week, but Mike and I were busy working in the United States and Canada, though neither of us in the same country at the same time, as it turned out.
That was weird, wasn't it?
Yes. Didn't actually see him once during an entire week visit here to the States. Yeah. So I had actually gone up to Montreal to get some of the scoop for what they're showing at IBC, record the now annual interview I think we've done with Philippe since he actually took over the lead of the Flame lead product designer several years ago. I guess it's basically to get the scoop of what they've been up to in the last year and maybe take a look at what they've been up to and are showing for the first time at IBC. Usually they show something new at IBC, so I don't think I'm necessarily divulging anything that's totally top secret regarding that. In addition to that, actually also working with them on some stuff related to future FX PhD courses as well, with obviously all the stuff that they have at Autodesk from Maya, Max, and the system products as well. So good trip from an FX PhD standpoint. And Mike traveled to what? Vancouver, San Francisco, LA?
Yeah.
Stuck in various places?
Yeah, a bit, yeah. Well, look, you know, I'm used to traveling as you are, of course, John, but I did have a bad run. I had four legs on this trip. I was in Vancouver, San Francisco, and LA. I had four flight legs. They managed to lose my bags, be delayed for 2 hours, and then be delayed for, I think it was 42 hours on the second to get home on the last leg. It was just brutal. So, yeah, anyway, there you go. Just traveling as one does and suffering at the hands of the fate of the travel gods as one does. But on the other side of the coin, what I got in the cities that where I was at was just spectacular. It was just such a joy to meet and talk with so many artists doing so much interesting stuff. And, of course, that's being fed already into background and into other stuff at Over at FX Guide.
Yeah, you can see a lot of that stuff as part of the background series and especially some of the rendering stuff as well. So look for more of that stuff coming out in the coming weeks. But and then I've been having some fun myself, actually, diving in the sysadmin course. It's interesting. I had fun doing the Unix bit, but now we're kind of moving on to compression. And, you know, when we started in all of our distribution, and obviously pay really close attention to trends, but still when you actually get down to actually doing the classes, and having to kind of take a look and doing research on what the current state is now and the tools now, like this very day, it's always fun because I actually always find myself learning something related to that. The next class I'm doing is related to compression and mainly actually H.264, which is kind of obviously now a critical step in our process because whether you're doing stuff for clients, for client approval, whether you're distributing final materials like we do for FX Guide, FX Guide TV, or FX PhD, of course, you're probably going to have to do something related to H.264 compression and getting the best possible image quality out as part of that and taking into account all the friggin' numerous devices that we have out there nowadays to deal with. Mike, I mean, just honestly, considering where it was when we started FX PhD to where it is now, the considerations for making sure it works across all those friggin' platforms is crazy.
Yeah, I mean, it used to be that we'd complain about having to get it to work in two different browsers. You know, and then it was just, yeah. I mean, look, I completely agree. And it's also kind of a more exacting thing because as bandwidth has gone up and stuff, people just, you know, no longer want to see crappy, pixelated, you know, dodgy kind of videos. They want really good quality, you know, well color corrected stuff. The whole benchmark or the I guess the bar has been lifted. And then to do all that work and then not have it faithfully reproduced because you got some things wrong as part of the export is just criminal. So, yeah, I mean, it's a really complicated process all around. That being said, it's assumed to be not a really complicated process at the same time. So people are like, yeah, just do the thing and the thing. And you're like, yeah, okay, well, it's not quite that simple. I would say, John, that the number of times I've had people send emails to me or ask questions about what we use to do compression and how we got it looking so good, it's been a consistent thing. You and I totally, my hat is off to you because you're the one that's been doing it. You've been keeping across this and in front of this for 7 years. And it's been, it's a non-trivial exercise.
Yeah, and in the end, it's quite interesting. In the end, it's a little bit of lowest common denominator that you have to worry about when you're doing something if you wanted to apply to multiple devices. Because you can have the approach that you do one thing and it works across, you know, 95 to 98% of the possible situations that you want it in, or you do five different ones that will actually work in every single test case. And thankfully, I have to say that based upon our viewership and based upon the field that we're in with our members, most everyone has fairly up-to-date items, whether that happens to be the latest phone of some kind, iPad, a tablet, web browser of whatever variety. Thankfully, what we deal with at Effects Guide and so forth is a bit more approachable because everyone's kind of cutting edge and utilizing the latest tech. They're not using the Internet Explorer browser from 7 years ago, Microsoft Silverlight and or Flash. We basically don't have to worry as much about matching all those things. But yeah, it's always a moving target. But again, that's what's kind of fun about checking out stuff. Even stuff that's articles that are written a year ago are now out of date because of changes that have been made in the last 6 months and smoothing out some of the, I guess you could call them fights between Google and MPEG LA and who handles the H.264 licensing and things like that. So it's certainly a moving target. But again, I'm enjoying this class. A lot of theory in one of the first class related to this, and the second class much more. Here's how you actually do it in the various apps. But I found I'm going to do actually one class, Mike, which is basically working through some different apps and the various settings that you might use. And then I realized you really can't explain this stuff without knowing all the info that's under the hood. It really helps know how to apply, you know, how to use the tools if you understand the principles underlying them. So it's a really good test case for what we obviously like doing in FX PhD, and that's get the foundation of knowledge right and then learn how to use the tools.
I enjoyed even your earlier classes doing, you know, Unix stuff. I mean, I know Unix stuff, but there was a few things that you were doing there. I was like, that's what John's doing at the moment. All right, cool.
Yeah, it's good. Again, one of the reasons I like, the web hat that I wear, but ends up making a lot of things easier if you know what you're doing. You can really make things pretty easy. It sounds complicated using the command line, but in the end, it actually, as I like to say, can make your life easier and less complicated, I guess, by doing some stuff on the command line and setting up right.
Yeah. I mean, look, you know, there are horses for courses, and obviously I am not one of those people that advocates doing command line because real men do use command line.
No.
That's certainly not my my MO, but yeah, I mean, look, you know, I really use it when I need to.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. And there are times when there are, you know, otherwise you just drop into having to do some stuff really manually. Like, I'm trying to think of an example, but like a renaming or a sort of thing or a whatever, you know, renumbering thing or something like that with the files. And it's like, really, how am I going to do this? And you could spend as much time hunting around the net trying to find some tool to help as you could just by doing it through the command line.
Yeah, but I'm also a big fan. It's like I tried to show some stuff when I was doing automation of, okay, here's how you do it, but okay, now here's a nice GUI program that help you do that easy. But actually, one of the reasons I like using the command line or scripts is that you get the consistent result every time. But actually, you were telling me how much you liked the new app that helped you make sure that you had, you know, solid transfers of the materials when you were out shooting the other day. You know, this idea of getting stuff off reliably, not doing it by hand, but having, you know, an automated process of sorts to make sure it gets done.
Yeah, I was talking about Bulletproof. And it was really good. I mean, it's a good app, and it was solving a specific problem. But apart from anything else, it was that thing about automating stuff, because it was copying stuff over to a drive and automating the process of then copying that and backing it up. And one of the problems I have is that if I'm in doubt, I'll like double copy stuff. It's almost like I go, well, this is looking good. Hang on, have I got those files? And I'm tired. And I mean, to give you an example of what we're talking about, like in a perfect world, none of this is, you know, but who lives in a perfect world? I got off the flight from San Francisco. I was meant to get a 5 o'clock flight, would get me in at 7:30. It's midnight before I get to where I need to be. And I've been filming all day and doing a ton of interviews up at ILM, as it happened. Really great interviews. But, you know, like if you're sitting down with four senior guys at ILM, you do your homework, you really pay attention, and you're thinking about a lot of stuff. You really concentrate hard, right? Plus, mm-hmm. you know, for them, this is their area of expertise that they handle each day. I'm not trying to sound like I'm big noting myself or what we do, but clearly, you know, I have to kind of hold my own with these experts in a bunch of different fields. One day it's, you know, industrial design. The next day it's guys doing, 3D modeling stuff, and the next day it's like renderers. And so you really have to kind of pay attention. So you're exhausted, you're tired, and then you have these like, you know, 3 or 4 hour delays getting down to somewhere.
My point is saying is,
and you're jet lagged, and you're in the wrong country, and you've had to go through Hertz, which thinks it's a really good idea to have the person helping you in bloody India and use a phone rather than try and do it with anyway. So the point is, and I'm driving on the wrong side of the road, and like, yeah, you know, so it's midnight. So at that point, my natural tendency is just try and grab every card and copy everything. And if I hadn't, a card wasn't quite reformatted before, because like obviously A and B cameras are not a problem, but then there's audio, there's C cameras, there are GoPros for behind the scenes shots, there's stills, there's publicity material, there's like B-roll, there's stuff we just shot around, there's some files that somebody gave you as you're walking out the door for some really cool stuff that they've been working on as a personal project. And I'll just like slam everything over to the drive, because the risk is better to have it than like screw up and not have it. But that just means redundancy, extra stuff, and then I've just got one drive that's clogged and you can't find anything. And some of these automated tools just meant, you know, copy it all over, know that I'd already got it or not, duplicated it to a second drive, and it's like, you know what, it was just worth its weight in gold to not have to think through all that, given that, you know, you're just not on your best. And, you know, by that stage, I think Jeff had offered me a tequila, so, you know, right, not that I was exactly. drunk or anything, but I was just like, you know, really, I'm just exhausted. That's where those tools become invaluable.
Yes, very, very, very true. Very true.
It's the process, really. So you want to rely on the process rather than having to rely on innovation at midnight, is what I guess I'm trying to say. If you've got a good system, that is just worth its weight in gold.
Yeah, that's, again, making sure it gets handled correctly, stuff gets backed up and off the cards correctly, especially critical for that stuff, because there is no turning back the next day when you need to reformat your card.
I actually did have one card that had some weird behind the scenes. I was just going to show people, you know, shots of like, well, this is where we had the cameras and the lights and stuff. And I just, you know, picked up the camera and just hit format. And just as I pressed the button, I went, oh my God, oh, that's the, you know, because I wasn't, it was not mm-hmm. the primary cameras. It was just like, and there's quite a lot of cameras at this point. And so I was just like, oh, that was the only mistake on the whole trip. And I was like, okay, well, I can live with that one. But yeah, you can't beat. You can't get a system that defeats me just screwing up my own system. I just thought I had it, you know. Apart from that, everything else went really well. Yeah.
Well, I'm going
to
be...
And then I tried to unformat it. You know, they've got these unformat things.
Yeah.
Doesn't work so well with video files because, you know, unless the video file is perfect, it just won't, play. And then I was like, I don't care. I did 26 interviews in 7 days. It's like, really? Some behind-the-scenes okay. seat roll? Yeah.
Yeah, I think you're okay with that. Right, exactly.
Not a problem.
Well, as it turns out, I am actually hopping a plane again at the last minute on Thursday. That's upcoming, a week from Thursday, when you're a week from... Actually, by the time you get this... I feel like I should start over. By the time you hear this, next Thursday, heading over to IBC covering stuff for Effects Guide there. I'm also going to be speaking at the first ever Flame Awards event, where they will be presenting the first ever Flame Award, as well as some other things that go along with that. That's Saturday night, the first Saturday night of IBC.
So if I win, just, you know, you can accept it on my behalf.
yes. And
I'm not expecting to win.
Oh, I guess they would ask you to go, wouldn't they?
Yeah, no, really.
By now. Or maybe you can't say.
I really, no, it was an honor to be asked, but I really don't think that I'm winning.
But yeah, so I'm going there to speak there, present that, talk about some of the process, because all joking aside, I was actually part of the advisory board, because the goal of the Flame Award to have it be a very much a community process. The nominees were nominated by the community. Mike was nominated for a Flame Award.
I think it was more out of respect for an old timer.
Very much not in the realm of Autodesk. So then they had votes for those people, and then an advisory committee of several of us, Jake Parker, Sheena Duggal, and a couple other people as well to help advise and help make the final decision as well, of which I was unable to. I had to, as they say, abstain from voting.
Is it related
to
that is Mr. a really Seymour? Good group of judges, right? No, but I mean, seriously, like Shana and Jake, these are really good.
All your friends. Gee.
They all would have abstained from voting for me. Yeah, no, that's fine. But I'm just saying.
No, but it is a group.
Seriously, they're really good people.
It is. I mean, it's a good group of people as well, some new people as part of that as well. So anyway, we're presenting that award for Saturday night. But also want to mention that we're having the FX Guide, FX PhD meetup as well on Friday night at the Koenigs Hut. I don't even know if that's how you say it. I'm sure someone from one of our members from the Netherlands can help me with that. But it's the Bar with Frank. Those of you who've been to IBC before know it's the Bar with Frank. A little bit of a, I wouldn't call it a dive bar. They've redone it lately, but it's on Friday evening at 7. So come by, have a beer, chat about everything FX PhD and FX Guide. It would be really great to see any of you who are listening there. And a special mention, I want to actually, what we're going to do is we're going to shoot some member testimonials when I'm there in Amsterdam. I would love to rope some of you into who are listening and might be there, basically to talk about your experiences on FX PhD, because we thought it'd be great to get kind of a member perspective on our site as part of the O-Week special for the October term that's coming up, as well as just general things, general videos for the site, talking about the site. But the idea being, talk about what FX PhD is, what it meant for you, how it helped you on the job, and so forth. And be really appreciative if you guys would help us with that. I know most of you got into the VFX business to not be in front of the camera, be behind the scenes, but certainly would help us. So drop me a line, John Mine at FX PhD, if you're going to be at IBC and would be willing to help us take part in that. It would really mean a lot and be really helpful to us, because I think it's one thing hearing about it from Mike and myself, but hearing about it from you guys actually, I think would be really helpful for people who are unsure or new to FX PhD.
Yeah, absolutely. I wish I could be there, but obviously I'm just so not traveling ever again. But no, it's really good to go to the meetups. The meetups are just awesome. You know, it's one of those things you go, well, I'm going to go to a party or a meetup. And it's like, but I have found those to be one of the most rewarding aspects. And people that go to them just agree. If you're there, just make the effort. I know sometimes you feel like, yeah, I'm a bit kind of like trash from the day. But hooking up with other people and being able to share notes and, you know, just make those face-to-face contacts with people you might have seen online invaluable.
Yeah, this is a low-key place. Good fun. It's low-key place. Mike's been there. You've been there, right, Frank? The bar that I'm sure you've been there. We went there when you were at IBC that year. And it's just no disco music, techno music pumping in the background. That's later in the week. That's what we do on Friday before everything gets started. We can hang out, chat, have a good time. Sit outside. It's generally nice in the evenings. And yeah, just find out what's been going on. It's really invaluable. And actually, all of our meetups effectively kind of started as an IBC thing. Actually, I remember my first time at IBC, it started as an FX Guide meetup before the days of FX PhD. And I posted on Flame News and basically like, hey, I'm coming to town, you know. We know where we should go to have a meetup. And it was so amazing, the community in Europe. Basically, the guys in Amsterdam, Ton and Halbo, actually found a place for us, had a great turnout, just people coming out. And it's kind of the start of why we like doing these meetups, and just a great way to network, put a face to name, and so forth. So, again, I hope to see you guys there. There are details on FX PhD about it. I've even posted on the FX Guide, FX PhD Facebook page, and we'll be tweeting that as well with the details. Come on, come all.
Yeah, absolutely. Plus, you'll buy a few drinks, right?
All on us, yes.
There you go.
For sure. And again, if you have any, as always, we'll be covering the show from there as well. But if you have anything or know of anything of interest that's coming up at the show, be sure to drop me a line as well. I'm only going to be there basically Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Really, Saturday, Sunday, honestly, just because we're so busy at FXPHD. But if there's anything cool, we definitely want to check it out.
Oh, there is stuff, cool stuff. I've got something I'll tell you about after this because I can't talk about it yet because it hasn't been released yet. That's really awesome that I've been let in on that's being released at IBC. In fact, IBC used to be like, you know, not much stuff was released there that was not already released at NAB. But then the entire pace of change in our industry has become so fast that now no longer is that true. That, you know, the amount of time between NAB and IBC is almost perfect for people releasing quite significant new stuff at IBC. So, yeah, I think there's some really interesting news coming out of IBC and I'm looking forward to it, other than, you know, who won the Flame Award.
Yes, and even stuff being announced now, like I thought assimilates announcement of Scratch Play was quite interesting as well. So, I mean, it's, I think, kind of smart to announce some of that stuff ahead of the news flood that is usually associated with IBC. And as always, if you're there at IBC, you can go by and check it out. But why don't you just freaking download Scratch Play because it's, well, free with ads, or a whopping $5 if you don't want to buy ads. It's actually pretty cool. Pretty impressive, actually. You should feel right at home because you are way more familiar with Scratch than I ever was.
I'll be honest, because, you know, that's the whole point about what we do. I have stopped using Scratch. I was very, very, very familiar with Scratch, and I stopped using it. It just went out of my workflow. And so I have got the new Scratch player, and I will have a look at it. And I know the Diamond Brothers are using it. But a while ago, it just became, I had a better workflow that didn't require Scratch. I just say that because things do evolve, right? And you're absolutely right.
No. I just meant, from the standpoint, it bears a lot of the stacks, and it bears, UI-wise, bears a lot of similarity between Scratch as all. I mean, I'm also, as I admitted, not actually a Scratch user, but actually this is actually quite an interesting product because of its support for a wide variety of pro codecs out of the box, and not to mention LUT support and look LUT support. So. There's some very interesting stuff that's part of it. And I scratched my head that they are the first people to actually do this. I've heard of other companies doing it or wanting to do it. I've heard years and years, frankly, of other companies talking about doing something like this, and it hasn't gotten done. And finally they did it.
Yeah. Well, I will, now that I'm back and unjet-lagged and, you know, able to walk straight, probably be checking it out. But yeah,
it's pretty interesting to be able to have access to such a wide variety of formats. Anyway, I just thought that was interesting. Again,
can I ask you about a rat hole?
Yeah,
just got nothing to do with anything.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so dear listener, I apologize about this, but you would know the answer to this, and no one else I know has. This has got nothing to do with DOD, nothing to do with FXPHD. I apologize.
Not even close?
Advance.
Okay.
Not even close. This is completely left field, right? It's like I was thinking about mobile devices, and I was having this discussion yesterday because there was a really interesting conference about disruptive technologies and stuff in Sydney. So it was really interesting. Anyway, this thing came up, and I just don't know if you know about it. I've not seen anything in the press about it. But about 2 or 3 weeks ago, I went to use my iPhone, and my search engine had switched from Google to Yahoo. And tons of people I know had the same phenomenon happen, but I never heard anything about it. Do you know anything about this? Like, it just suddenly was the case that my phone would do a search using Yahoo, not Google, on my Safari on my phone. Ringing any bells? It happened in the US?
You had that happen? Actually, it changed it automatically?
Yeah, like I know a bunch of people, and if you did a search on it, a bunch of people would say, my phone is suddenly using Yahoo, not Google. How do you change it back? And you can change it back.
Yeah, it's in the settings, yeah.
Yeah.
But no? I had not heard about that actually anywhere. And I just gave you my list. I was telling you yesterday in email about my daily things that I check every day, and I'm kind of in tune with that. I have not heard of that. What happened?
I think what happened, well, I don't know, but I think my theory is they did a pilot scheme in a country like Australia to see whether it would be a problem if, because, you know, I don't know how what the money is, but there's obviously a lot of money in search, and a lot of money comes from the default setting, because whatever your default is what you use, right? Like, very few people, you know, would go and change that, yeah? You wouldn't even notice, most people, right? But I was wondering whether they just did it as a test to see, because, you know, Yahoo's had this complete overhaul and management shakeup, and has, for the first time in years, kind of got new life breathed into it. And I also saw that Yahoo's search results had gone up dramatically in, and I was, well, I thought, well, obviously it would go up dramatically if you did a deal with Apple whereby a whole lot of people were automatically searching on Yahoo instead of Google. I mean, that would instantly, you know, have a massive effect given the penetration of iPhones. It wouldn't completely tip the entire balance of the industry or anything, right? But it would you know, have to account for a few percent, right? It would account for a spike, like a bump. Anyway, I just thought you were the sort of guy that was tapped into this kind of
thing. I have not. I have actually not. Not heard
so when this conspiracy is uncovered, just, you know, you heard it here first. That's what I'm saying. All I'm saying. Yeah, keep your ear. I swear to God, this is what happened. And like my daughter
on the iPhone, like, not on your desktop. Okay.
No, absolutely not on my desktop. Yeah, no, like on my iPhone, I would literally type something, and you just realize that you're doing Yahoo searches instead of Google searches in Safari. And then if you went out to the settings, you could change it to be back to Google. But it required, you know, two or three button presses to go to the setup, to click that bit and to change it back. And so that's not something you would accidentally do. You wouldn't accidentally wander into.
And it's not possible that it could be the internet provider that you were using, because I have been in certain cases where I've been on a Wi-Fi network and actually entered a search thing in my browser, and the DNS for that Wi-Fi provider intercepts it and sends it somewhere else.
Well, in this case, the Wi-Fi provider would be, you know, my house.
Okay, that would be no. Or did your provider do that for DNS, maybe, for some reason? Because that has actually happened to me. That's the only thing I can think of that happened. So basically what happens when you use DNS is you have a site.google.com. It queries the DNS server for the IP address to check with and where to send it. Well, what happens sometimes is wherever your DNS is being provided from by, sometimes they might want to mess with it by intercepting that and directing it somewhere else. It's really inappropriate to do that. Very inappropriate. But that's what might happen technically under the hood, I suppose. And if it happened in Australia, maybe there's a provider in Australia that decided that would be a good idea.
Now, I reckon that they were like, you know, I wonder if people will notice. I wonder if people will complain. I think they just, you know, it's under the radar.
Right.
That's my theory.
Apple.
If it was true, and if it was what I think it is, I would have thought that you would have known about it. But we'll see.
I have definitely not heard about it. Hey, also, by the way, I was in when I was in Montreal, I was at Autodesk. This is somewhat related now to PhD, and I was talking about how my perspective on how certain aspects are about Google are actually quite evil, basically tracking, maintaining our data, and things like that. We're having discussion about this, and someone's boyfriend was actually working at Google, and it's like, you know, my kids go there, and yes, I mean, I hate the fact that this is the person I was talking to said, I hate the fact they go to Google, and it's really amazing workspace, really great environment to be an employee, but at root, they can be so evil. And we started talking, I related our story of having our website shut down by then a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
Well, we now have a contact at Google that I can call, because
really?
This person's boyfriend is the person who does that. So we now, should this ever happen again to us, I at least have someone that I can actually, under the radar, get in contact with and find out what the deal is and what's going on with that. So that's pretty cool. Put
can
that
I just
in a file.
Say, do not offend that person.
No, you're right. You're right. Hopefully Google, unlike the NSA, is not analyzing word by word our podcast and communication and logging that. Google starts blacklisting us based on what I say in the DoD.
No, we love Google. Google is good.
Yes. There are many things Google is good. I use Google all the time. I just, you know, But I just mentioned that as part of our conversation with that. So I'm very happy to know that, because that was actually really problematic, as those of you who listen to DoD regularly heard. That was a definitely a difficult situation for us at FXPHD at the most critical time in the term, frankly, to have our site semi-blocked by a bad malware flag.
Which you know, I just want to reiterate, we didn't have a problem.
Right, right.
Which is important, right?
Yes.
It wasn't like we had a bug and they flagged it and then we fixed it. They wrongly flagged us.
Yes, yes. So, anywho, all in the end, now we know what to do.
Yeah. Yes, well, that's good. I'm glad you're connected. Did you, you know, this is really funny. Like, you know, my picture of Canada is a sophisticated country that has, I don't know why I'm doing this. I'm going off to, yeah, again. But like, I just thought, I'm going up to Canada. That's great. You know, like, I'll get some really great cuisine. And I got exactly half of what I wanted. The half I wanted is I got really good sushi because they have great red eye sockeye salmon up there, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. As you know, I love that, right?
Yeah.
My favorite thing. Yeah, but the other thing I was thinking, Canada, right? Like the French influence. Oh, I bet you get like really, really good, you know, French and stuff, right? And so I was like, went out one morning to have, you know, baguettes and coffee and croissants and stuff. And I got, and I went to a place that looked exactly like it should be exactly that in the, in Yale Town, which is like a really hip, cool area. And it was like, you know, I was not in a mall or something. And it was just completely pedestrian. I was like so disappointed. And then I went, yeah, wrong side of Canada, mate.
At, just cut to John in Montreal, who had some of the most amazing
baguette
and croissant during my stay. The neighborhood around the Hotel St. Paul, where I've been going and staying for, I mean, years, right? This is the early days of Flame when the office moved over there to Rue Duke, has really changed. So, yes, I had the exact opposite experience. But I did have, frankly, have the, you know, apologies to the Quebecois who are listening, but a little bit of Quebecois attitude.
You have to explain that to people.
I'm not sure I don't want to explain that, but no,
oh, really?
it's fine. It's French is the official language in Quebec, with English second, and
oui?
Needs to be supported. And I speak French when I'm there, or attempt to speak French when I'm there. But it seems to me I might just be way off base, but it seems like I get more flack with my bad French in Quebec than I do in Paris, which is like unheard of, right? You know, the legend is the Parisians,
a little,
frankly, you know, the worst of the worst in that case, right? But I, for some reason, it just must be something about me that I always get tons of flack there. And
is it that your French is too French? And because isn't there a whole thing about the
accent?
Canadian,
yeah. Right? The accent is very different. Yes, I'm speaking the European French, and the Quebecois accent is quite different. But anyway, I digress considerably. We've gone way off the rails on this DoD. But I do love Quebec and the Quebecois, and lots of friends there. But I just, for some reason, I seem to suffer the brunt of the scorn for bad talking Americans.
I think you're quite multicultural, and I think that's unfair.
Well, thank you, my friend.
All right, well, we should go.
Yes. And again, we will do a DoD next week, and again, I'll bring up IBC, but please hope I'll see you guys in Amsterdam. If you can't make the meet up on Friday, drop me a line on Twitter or Facebook or email or whatever, and try and get together, because I'd love to run into anyone who might be listening to this while I'm in IBC. It's a big reason as to why I'm going. All right, we'll talk to you next week, guys. See ya.
See ya.
Thanks for listening. This podcast is copyright FX PhD.